Hello and welcome to another episode of History Hack. Alex is all excited again, so I'm going to pass you over to her.
Yeah, boom. I'm really excited. I went and found us explorers history. Who cannot be excited by the history of exploring things? We have with us Matt Breen, who runs his own podcast, which is the Explorers Podcast, funnily enough. He's currently in Wisconsin trying not to eat all the cheese on lockdown. I'd fail miserably. How are you?
I am very good, thank you.
Oh, yeah, I think lockdown and that much cheese, awesome cheese, and I would fail.
Yeah, pretty much cheese and beer. So,
Excellent. So you've come on today. What we're going to do is you've picked your top five explorers, and we're going to tell people why. I really like this idea. So, Alina, jump in with the first one.
I'm going to jump in with James Cook. So, first of all, can you tell us who he is?
Yes, James Cook was an English sea captain, naval captain for the British Navy, and he is probably the person who explored more miles than anyone in history that I can think of. He, over the course of about 12, 13 years, I believe, he did three voyages around the world. He circumnavigated the globe, and he is primarily known for his exploration in the South Pacific, in Asia, in Antarctica, Australia, that area. And it's just phenomenal in Hawaii and even up into the North America. But the breadth of what he did is just astounding. And that is really why he is so famous. He never had that kind of I found America moment or something that everyone kind of associates him with. But the amount of things he did and the breadth of things is just really staggering.
So what did he do to contribute to history?
I think the big thing that Cook did was he opened up so many areas to Western knowledge. Everything from New Zealand and Australia, not necessarily being the first person there, but he mapped tons of these places. He brought back this knowledge to the world, and the amount of stuff that he did is just huge. And it wasn't just the knowledge of the places. These were scientific expeditions as well. So they had botanists and naturalists on their ships. So he opened up the world in a lot of different ways to people.
Why does he actually make your list? What do you like about him?
I think the thing I like about Cook is he was very, very efficient about what he did. He was smart. He learned from what he did. He was meticulous. And I appreciate this in not just explorers, but anyone. But it's really important with an explorer because if you don't do this, you die. He learned to, he was a cartographer, he was a geographer. He was just a really, really effective person in organizing these things. And he got to where he wanted to go, did what he did, and he did it really efficiently. And you know, I will give an example. He went around the world, and not one single man on his ship died of scurvy. And
Wow.
that was extraordinary for the time because scurvy was just a terrible thing. But again, he listened to what people said when they were saying, you know, maybe we should be eating these things, even though they didn't know for sure. He made sure it happened that they had limes and lemons and oranges or whatever else that they did, and they survived. And I appreciate that in a guy like Cook. He was a bit of a kind of, you know, if you want to give a kind of a stereotypical British officer kind of guy, you know, very bossy and things like that. But on the other hand, he was incredibly proficient. And that's what I think is what I like about him is that he was able to do so much and he did it smart. He did it efficient. And he ends up dying because he loses a little bit of that when he got killed in Hawaii, when he gets involved with people that he shouldn't have. But he was generally just a really, really good, he was really a good leader and a smart leader. And I appreciate
So Hawaii is going to be his worst moment. So tell
that.
everyone what becomes of him.
Yeah, so he is credited with rediscovering Hawaii because Spanish, I believe Spanish explorers or naval mariners had come across it in the 1600s, but it had kind of been lost. But he came back and refound it in the late 1770s and went off, did some exploring in North America and came back to Hawaii. And he was on his way to leave when one of his ships had a, like I think a mast broke or something like that. And as they were waiting to fix this, some of the native peoples there decided they liked one of the little boats that the English had, and they decided to take it. And Cook insisted on getting it back. This was a kind of a thing where a lot of times where cultures where you have, sometimes with some of the South Pacific Islanders, there's like a culture of sharing where you see something you want to use, you go and take it. And I don't necessarily know if that's the case in Hawaii, but they took it and he did not take kindly to that. And so he went to take it back. And one thing led to another and he got killed by the natives. So that was the end of Cook. If he had been a little smarter and understood what the situation was like and tried to defuse it, he might have survived, but he did not.
God bless him. That's a proper explorer's end, isn't it?
Yeah, they mostly end like that, or actually probably more they end up, you know, withering away in some godforsaken place without food or anything like that. So at least he was in a nice place and didn't die of starvation or something like that, which so many do.
Let's talk about your next guy. So you picked Ferdinand Magellan. So first of all, tell everybody who he is.
Ferdinand Magellan was the first man to circumnavigate the world. 1519, he was Portuguese, but he sailed for Spain. And in 1519, he departed from Spain. And over the next few years, he would go through what is now the Strait of Magellan. So being the first person to go around South America, and then he would reach Asia, and then his ship would then go back around Africa and reach back to Spain. Now, he did die in the Philippines. Just like James Cook, he got involved in the locals, a local war. He decided it was a good idea. Like, again, these guys, they should learn never to get involved in local politics. And he didn't learn that. And he got involved and he died in the on the beach in the Philippines, killed by a Philippine warlord named Lapu-Lapu. And that was his end. But his expedition circumnavigated the globe. And it is, I would arguably say it is the single greatest achievement in exploration in history. Because, I mean, it's not only just an incredible achievement to be the first person to sail around the world, to have the audacity in your heart, in your mind, to do that, that you're willing to sail into nothingness and trust that you're going to get back is incredible. But also it really put the world into perspective for the world. I mean, we now knew really how big the world was and where a lot of these big chunks of places were. Mm. And so it was an incredible moment and an achievement. And it was the really the one thing he did. And it was, if you're going to pick one thing to do, that's just the amazing one.
Yeah. Like you say, it's pretty special, isn't it? That you can, I mean, there is no map. No one knows what's out there. I mean, Do people still believe you'll drop off the edge?
At the time, and this is a common misperception, a lot of people, you know, like when I grew up, I was told, you know, all the ignoramuses thought that they would go sailing off the edge of the world. But to be honest, most scholars, most academics, most learned people really did believe the world was round, and they did not think that was going to happen. Now your common uneducated person probably, you know, did not think that, but for the most part people did. But still, you had to make a leap of faith that wasn't going to happen, or, you know, that you weren't going to go into an ocean that didn't end for not just 30 days or 60 days, but, you know, forever, for 100, and you die. And that's why, like, you know, the Norse explorers are so amazing, that they did it without even that knowledge. And I always give Christopher Columbus, for all his faults, he went into the nothingness, on the faith that he would find something. And that's an incredibly audacious and brave thing to do, because again, you just can't tell. You think you're right and you think it's going to be fine, but you know what? It's not always the case. So it's an amazing thing to do that.
Talking about Columbus, you didn't put him on your list. What made him not make the cut?
I was kind of like picking some people from eras, and I wanted at least one from the Age of Discovery, which would be Magellan. The Age of Discovery would be 1450 to 1650-ish around. And Columbus, his voyage to the Americas is probably, and I don't want to sound like I'm like overly dramatic at times here, because I've made the journey around the world the greatest achievement ever. But Columbus's rediscovery of America really is one of the most, if not the most, pivotal moment in Western history. Mm. I mean, it brought two, you know, worlds together. And so that is incredible. And so for Columbus, that was great. Problem with Columbus was he became an administrator. He didn't have the foresight to die nice and young, and then he went and screwed up everything.
So he eroded his own legacy.
Yeah, he became an administrator, and he was an awful administrator. He helped set up what would be the Spanish encomienda system. It was brutal. It would lead to the deaths of hundreds of thousands of people. He engaged in slavery. He was just a really, and he was not good at any of this. He was, and as a person, as you read, if you read about him, he's a really unlikable guy. He's always whining. He's always, he's like letters to Ferdinand and Isabella. It's just like, oh gosh, I have done so much for you. And then, you know, he's always whining and, you know, and he's obsessed with slights and money, and he's just not a likable man. But he is a very good navigator, a very good mariner. He went on and makes some important discoveries, and is really a first-rate explorer. But he gets dinged for being a jerk.
I like it. And he also doesn't get the epic death scene on the beach, does he?
No, he does not. No.
That's kind of boring, really. Kind of a boring end.
Yeah, he dies kind of a poor, lonely...
bitter, probably.
Mostly blind. You know, these guys who sailed on the ocean, their retinas would basically get shot from so much glare over the course of time. So he was mostly blind by the end. He couldn't even come out on his final voyage. He couldn't even come out during the day on his ship. He had to come out at night.
What goes around comes around when you're a jerk, though, right?
That you're correct.
Right, so I'm gonna don't make fun of me for the next one, right? So if if I say out loud, if I'm gonna do this, ready, Marco. So we're talking about Marco Polo next. So can you tell us who he was? And to me, he sounds kind of exciting. So let's go for it.
Alrighty, Marco Polo. I wanted someone who was a little more. I want to say early explorer. There's certainly much earlier ones, but Polo is from the late 1200s. He was a Venetian merchant, and Venice was like one of the preeminent trading entities of the Mediterranean at that time and for many, many centuries. But he is famous because he would go to Asia as a young man. His father's family was merchants, and he went there for trading interests. And he would spend, if I'm correct, 17 years there. He met like the Kublai Khan, and he would travel to China and India and, you know, Southeast Asia, and travel the Silk Road, go to Persia, and he would come back. And what made him famous? Now, a lot of people had done this before. But the extensive time he spent there, 17 years, was really extraordinary. And then he came back and he basically told someone all these stories. And I honestly can't remember the gentleman's name. He was a romance writer, actually, who wrote a book called The Travels of Marco Polo. And, or what was it? It was actually called The Book of Marvels of the World, I think was the other name for it, which I love. And this is why Marco Polo, I think, was so important, in that this book was huge and it captivated Europe. And it inspired people like Columbus and Magellan, people who they wanted to get to the Far East, because Marco Polo told of all these fantastic places, the riches, and, you know, and it was just incredible to them and they wanted to get there. And the people in Europe, they understood that things like the spices and silk and gems and porcelain and everything came from the Far East, but that all had to come overland or by the Arabian Sea. And so they were obsessed with, you know, finding a different way there. And so that was a huge thing for Europe. And that's why Marco Polo is so important. One, because of what he did, which is pretty cool, but also because of the influence that he had on later explorers. So when the Age of Discovery came, they wanted to get there because of the things he talked about and the opportunity that those places offered them.
What did he actually contribute to history?
I think the big thing is he brought to Western world, and when I say Western world, I mean Europe, European world, he brought the knowledge of what was actually in the Far East. A lot of people, it was just basic, like the Chinese or the Indians were out there and they didn't know much about them. It was all second and third and fourth hand type stories. And he brought this direct first person narrative to the Western world. And I think that was really the big thing that he did for them for that.
So why does he actually make your list?
He did it because, one, it was an extraordinary thing what he did at the time to go and spend nearly 20 years in the Far East. It was not a common thing to do and to survive. It was not an easy thing. It was a dangerous, he had to take ships through the Gulf of Arabia. He had to travel the Silk Road. He was attacked by bandits. And then he had to negotiate living in a foreign world for, like I say, almost two decades. And that was an amazing thing for the time. When a lot of people never went 20 miles beyond where they lived, he went, thousands and thousands and in places that were just legends to most people. And so that was amazing. And then I think the amazing thing was then his influence on later people is what I think is just so critical. People read his Marco Polo's book and they wanted to get to that area. And that made the Portuguese, the Spanish, everyone want to open up trade routes and to get there. And that inspired people to try to go around Africa, to go to America, to go across the Pacific. All those things were to get the Northwest Passage. Everyone wanted to get to the Far East and establish those trade routes. And so it was so critical. And he was the one that kind of started that.
How does it end for him?
He died a pretty good, just became a rich merchant and just faded away and lived a good life. So I think of him as more of a traveler than an explorer in a lot of ways, that he wasn't like blindly setting off into places that no one knew about or hardly anyone really knew about. He was going into very populated, in fact, very advanced civilizations, and so a lot of ways he's like the great traveler of history. And he then came back and just, his family were merchants and that's what he did till he died. I can't remember. I think just of old age.
I'd like to have had a drink with him. He sounds like fun.
Oh, that would have been amazing. And the thing is, he also went, when he was in China and stuff, he was at the height of the of the cons and stuff like that. So it would have been extraordinary to have been there. Yeah.
So Richard Francis Burton is your next one. Tell us who he is.
All righty. Richard Francis Burton is one of my favorite explorers and favorite people in history. He's someone that a lot of people don't know. You hear the name Richard Burton and you want to say, oh, a Welsh actor. But Richard Francis Burton was a soldier, a linguist, an ethnologist, a cartographer, a geographer, a spy, a poet, a diplomat, and an explorer. He was just this extraordinary guy. He spoke 29 different languages. He was British, and he lived in the 1800s. And he started out as a soldier, and in India, exploring, because he was, I'm not saying this really good. This guy was fascinated with just learning. And that's why I love him. He was obsessed with other cultures. He was the first person, recorded person, maybe not the first, but he was one of the first people to make a journey into Mecca and Medina, and when it was death for a non-Muslim to go into those holy cities, he disguised himself. He even got himself circumcised so that there would be no mistakes if someone saw that he wasn't circumcised and realized he wasn't an Arab. But he would then go on to explore in East Africa in the Great Lakes area around Lake Victoria, Lake Tanganyika, Tanganyika, Lake Tanganyika. He was the first Western person to find that lake, which is one of the great African lakes. He was just an amazing person, and he loved adventure. He was what Indiana Jones would have been if he was a real person in my book. He was just had this insatiable desire to learn and to experience things. And it wasn't just, it was cultures, it was the world, it was things like sex. I mean, he was the first person, he translated the Kama Sutra and the Arabian Nights, which were, you know, banned books and everything. He was the first person to do those things. And so he had this just love of learning and a love of just finding out stuff. And he was just kind of a rascal. His nickname was Ruffian Dick, which is a great name. But but he was just an extraordinary person. And I'm probably not doing him justice the way I describe him, but he was just this... just this one of a kind guy who was just so smart. And as an explorer, I will say this, he immersed himself in those cultures and he believed in learning about those places, which is very rarely the case in so many times in history where the cultures are just kind of blown off by the explorers. They're just like, oh, they're just savages. When that was not always, that was not really the case with Burton. He learned about the people. He would learn their languages and their customs. And he would, they even said he would go native is what he was accused of. So that's what I love about Burton.
I just want to double check. You said 29 languages. Am I correct?
Yeah. Yeah. It is incredible. His writing is incredible. He has if I remember right, he has over you can find them online. There's a site dedicated and he's got over 200 articles and pamphlets and it's all over the board, the stuff, you know, that he talks about. So he just dove into these things and he translated, he translated stuff from other languages, which a lot of people, that wasn't even worth their time and effort because it was another language and heaven forbid, that can't be any good, you know? It was just extraordinary.
What do you think his single biggest or best achievement is? Out of so many.
Yeah, and I think that this is the thing that actually probably, I don't want to say hurts Burton, but it doesn't make Burton that big in the eyes of history is he doesn't have that single great achievement. Mm. He didn't discover the world, you know, discover America. He didn't sail around the world. He didn't do, he doesn't have that. His biggest thing as an explorer would be his explorations of East Africa and the African Lakes area. He was trying to find the source of the Nile, and him and John Hanning Speke went to look for it, and Speke was the one who actually found it. Burke came very close, but he did not get there. So if you want to say he doesn't have that one single event in his life, so I really can't even pick one. It's really just a culmination of just a amazing life.
Well, he sounds amazing, and I don't think you really need to justify where he makes your list, because he is just awesome.
Yeah, and like I say, I love him because he's so different from so many explorers, especially who, you know, like even his contemporaries, you know, Henry Morgan Stanley, who did a lot of exploring of Africa. Just, I mean, he marched through with a lot of guys with guns and shot people left and right. And, you know, it was just, you know, this, the carelessness and the callousness of some explorers is just incredible. And Burton was not that. It was, he immersed himself with these people and with the people that he visited. And I think that was admirable.
What becomes of him?
He basically, as he got older, he became a diplomat and served in various posts around the world, Brazil or in South America and the Middle East. And he died, he lived to like 69 years old, if I'm correct, and died of like a heart attack or something like that. So he lived a long life. He was kind of a pariah in a lot of corners, because he was not the guy that followed the company line all the time, and so he never got the prime posts or anything. But he wrote all the way through his death, and he had an amazing wife who did the same thing. She was quite the free spirit herself, and so I think you're like, okay, that's a good way to go, you know, better than in the surf of the Philippines or on a ship in the Arctic that can't move anywhere.
Oh, that one is horrific. Yeah, that certainly was going to make the list of any best explorers, but that's kind of like your worst case scenario, isn't it? Just helplessly being stranded.
Yeah. The guys who get stuck in the desert, the guys who get stuck in the Arctic or Antarctic, it's just because it's just this slow wasting away. And it's just heartbreaking when you read some of those stories, and also inspiring too, in the case of like Shackleton, who, you know, saved all those men and everything. But, you know, I can't imagine spending, you know, over a year just sitting on a boat on the Arctic ice or the Antarctic ice. It's just amazing.
It's going to make you go crazy, isn't it? But you have, and I'm really glad you have picked someone from the Antarctic forest. You've gone for Roald Amundsen, who discovered or got to the South Pole first, didn't he? But tell us some more about him.
Yeah. So that would be Roald Amundsen, which is the actual Norwegian, but we all like Roald. But Roald Amundsen was a Norwegian, and he was famous for in the early 1900s for his explorations. And we know him, as you said, for being the first person to reach the South Pole. But he is also the first person to lead a ship through the entire Northwest Passage over the North America. And he was brilliant. He took a small little fishing boat, and took him like 3 years. He went from one side of North America to the other in a boat, the first person to ever do that. And that was an amazing thing. And then in 1911, he led the first team from, it was again, to Antarctica, and became the first person to reach the South Pole. And also later on in the 1920s, he led the first aerial crossing of the North Pole. Now, some people say Richard Byrd did it, but there's some controversy there. But he led a dirigible, a balloon, across the North Pole. So he was the first person to do that. So he has all these signature moments in reality. But the thing that's so great about him was he was just a guy I love because he learned from what he did. And it's not always the case with a lot of these people. And so, like, on that first trip to the Arctic, when he did the Northwest Passage, he learned from the Inuit people how to dress, how to use dogs. He learned, you know, the food that he needed. He learned how to survive because he spent a year, one winter, just trapped in months on end, trapped in the snow, in the ice. He learned to survive, and he applied those things to the South Pole expedition. And I know one of the big things with the South Pole expedition was it was basically a race between him and Robert Falcon Scott, and he beat Scott by about a month, and Scott ended up dying along with his entire team because they, you know, if you look at the two expeditions, they just weren't prepared like Amundsen was, the other one. And, I respect that so much in a guy who can take those things. He wasn't afraid to learn, like in the case of the Inuit people, about their clothing. One of the big things you'll see in these Arctic and Antarctic things, these guys are wearing these heavy wool layers and stuff. Well, you know, when you're working your butt off, you still sweat, even if it's 20 below.
Yeah.
And so then you stop, and what happens is your lower layers then freeze on you. And it's uncomfortable. It's bad for you. It's not healthy. But the Inuit would wear, the animal skins and stuff that were naturally wicking without all these layers. And he learned from that kind of a thing, an example of how he took something he learned and transitioned it into later expeditions. And not being afraid to learn from what people, you know, viewed oftentimes as like savages and things like that.
Do you think the Northwest Passage was a better achievement than the South Pole?
I would say no. The Northwest Passage, we kind of knew what it was, and people had done it on foot, combining foot and ship. So it was kind of passé, I guess. It was kind of already done. But I think as a overall achievement, it was a more difficult thing because it took like three years to do. And a lot of people thought that he was just gone when he just showed up. Hey, look at me. And so it was a huge deal, but it was amazing. I hadn't even thought about that. So that's why I'm kind of like not sure. But the South Pole was the pole races to me kind of exemplify where exploration became achieving goals as opposed to just exploring to find the knowledge. Understanding the Northwest Passage is really a valuable thing. You know, you can use that information. But getting to the North Pole or the South Pole, it's kind of like, well, it's not like, you know, we have to establish trade routes here. You know, it's more of doing something for the sake of doing something. It doesn't mean it isn't great and it isn't cool. But getting to the top of Mount Everest, getting to the North Pole, doing those things doesn't fundamentally change the world as some of the earlier explorations did.
Do you think there's anything left that can change the world in terms of exploring now, or has it all been done?
I think there is some fascinating stuff with undersea exploration.
Yeah.
But I'll be honest, it's not an area I know that much about. And you watch Robert Ballard and James Cameron do some of these things. And with the technology of the video and stuff, it's just amazing to watch that. But, I think that some of the undersea stuff will offer opportunities probably for, just science to learn a lot. But I don't know if there's anything really that, you know, short of moving outside of this planet.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, like the moon is probably like, was the most pivotal thing, of exploration that we could really have had in the last, you know, 50, 70 years or whatever. But I don't know, because a lot of it is just, it's taking what has been done and doing it differently or more efficiently. It's like, okay, I'm going to be the first person to cross the North Pole, on skis or with a dog sled or, you know, without any help or, when I'm a teenager, you know, it becomes kind of more of that. And there's people that do that, and I'm fascinated by them, to be honest. And I think it's cool. A lot of them tend to take those things and wrap them in causes and stuff like that, or awareness of something. But a lot of them, they're doing it because it's a cool obsessive thing that they want to do. And I don't know. Do you guys, can you think of anything that hasn't quote unquote been
explored? Not like you say, unless like they find something deep down. Yeah, it's got to be underwater, hasn't it?
Yeah, there's some opportunities with, I think, caves and things like that. But even then, what you're finding when your cave diving is, it's not like you find, you know, civilizations or...
No, it's not like you're going to find the Western Hemisphere and the Eastern or anything like that. You're talking about you really admire, obviously, the guys that learn as they go and that learn from their mistakes and that... Yes. Will absorb information to make themselves better explorers. But you must have come across, who's the worst one you can think of? Who's just an utter failure of an explorer?
Okay. Now you have to know, I don't know all the explorers. So a lot of people, they want me to tell them all about everything. And I'm like, I only know so many. I'm doing a series right now I'm in the process of doing on the Burke and Wills expedition, which is an attempt in the 1860s to cross Australia from the south to the north. And the guy who's leading it, his name is Robert O'Hara Burke. And the guy is really fascinating. I like him. He makes so many blunders. It kills me. And he ends up dead in the desert because of it. That just kills me, especially because of how well financed and provisioned and everything this expedition was. And they make so many mistakes. The first and foremost, not being able to communicate with the local native peoples, you know, right there. Communication, by the way, is one of the biggest keys in all of these people in their ability to survive as you go. It's just amazing. So Burke is frustrating because I want him to succeed and I want to like him in that respect. I did one episode on a guy named Panfilo de Narvaez. He was a Spanish conquistador. And I probably have never read anything more on how a worse man. He was an ass. He was cruel. He was a conquistador. He killed lots of people. He tried to go to Mexico in 1520 and get Cortez under control and lost his entire army to Cortez. He was a failure. Well, he ultimately tried to go to Florida and find another big, everyone, the Spanish conquistadors all love to go find the next Mexico City or the next, Inca Empire. And he went in there with 300 guys and only four of them came back.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Oh, it was. And the only reason we really know much about him is that he landed with 300 guys in Florida, promptly just started losing people left and right to warfare and to disease and so forth and starvation. And then they basically were stuck there. And so they decided to build small boats and sail along the Gulf Coast of the United States down to Mexico to get to safety. And in the end, he got swept out to sea on a boat and it was never heard from again. Nicely done. The guy was a jerk. And only four men survived. And one of those was a guy named Alvaro Nunez Cabeza de Vaca. And Cabeza de Vaca is an incredible story because he spent then, if I'm right, if I remember it right, I think 8 years living in what would be northern Mexico and Texas and stuff like that, and eventually marching by foot across the southwest of the United States and what would be northern Mexico to get to the west coast of the continent and march down to the south to get back to Spanish-controlled territory. And it took him like 8 years, and it was him and three other guys. And so that was just like an incredible story. And the only reason I did the Panfilo de Narváez thing is because it kind of was the prequel to Cabeza de Vaca's story. And I was just like, well, this is a good story. And it's one that actually was a terrible failure. And the other one would be that I've done recently. I did one on the Franklin expedition, which was a complete, in so many ways, understanding that you have to adapt to your world and thinking that you can just march into or sail into this world and you'll just with pluck and determination and a lot of stuff on your ships and you'll get away with it. And you know, 130 men died because of it. It was, I think, the biggest disaster in British naval exploration history. Just, it was terrible.
Yeah. And as you say, like a total refusal to sort of understand that you're going to have to, you're not just going into like the Yorkshire Dales or whatever, you're going into a completely inhospitable environment that you can't comprehend.
If they had looked at previous explorers who had been in the north, they would have understood how important it was to, say, for instance, get food, fresh food, and so forth. These expeditions, when they tried to survive on everything being canned or, you know, jerk meat, things like that, they would die of scurvy. But when you can get enough vitamins by eating fresh meat. And when they would do that, they'd survive. Yet no one literally looked at those previous things and went, hey, we need to do this. And they never learned. And like I say, they sailing in and, you know, he's taking China and things like that with him and just trying to take like his whole Victorian British world with him into the Arctic is just kind of nuts. In his defense,
man, you can't go anywhere without a good smoking jacket.
Exactly. And like bottles of whiskey and brandy. And they had, you know, it was like, again, it was like they wanted to take their, you know, aristocratic lifestyle and just put it on a ship and not have to, you know, as far as he was concerned, he was just going to sit on this ship and just sail through everything and just survive like that. And that just doesn't work.
Yeah. That's called bringing the British, I think.
Matt, thank you so much for joining us and giving us your top five explorers, from James Cook to Marco Polo and obviously your favourite, Richard Francis Burton. And hopefully you should be able to join us on another podcast very, very, very soon. So thank you.
Thank you very much for having me, guys.
Join us tomorrow when Catherine Fellows will be with us to talk all about the Borgias, not only why they were so prominent, how they got there, but also their representations in popular culture as well. So we have a good old chinwag about Jeremy Irons and everybody else who's brought them to life on screen. So don't miss that.
Don't forget, you can become a patron of History Hack for as little as $1 a month. Just go to www.historyhack.podbean.com. It will help us keep going in the aftermath of the coronavirus, and we would really appreciate it, as we would love to do so.